The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The next article is titled, Creating New Worlds with Black Art. As we all struggle to balance the hurt and healing of this shifting time, we need swinging machete sharp words, fresh water metaphors. We need new images animated by our visions. Our lives are larger than singing our suffering or picking at the scabs of our scars. We are the prayers of our pleasure, the remedies of our rage. We tend to our inherited wounds, nourished by active listening. Who are we? Loved and alive? We need truth-telling courage. Amid the tumult in the streets, we must remind ourselves that we are sacred and present in all things. Until we deeply reflect, until we are supported in the efforts of our healing, we will continue to live in fear, insecurity, and trauma. On any given day, social media mocks our shadow selves, constantly reinforcing our triggers and advertising our most destructive behavior. We need art that can speak to and transform the times, inviting us to revision and reimagine ourselves in relationship with one another, to organize and relate beyond our screens. As a poet and organizer, I am doing my part by creating artwork that will serve as the centerpiece for V-Day, which came from the theater art piece by V, formerly Eve Ensler, called the Vagina Monologues, to end violence against all women, cisgender and transgender, those who hold fluid identities, non-binary people, girls, and the planet. It is time for new art and new stories to be at the center of our movement. Through my contribution, Voices, I'm ensuring that V-Day's Voices will feature stories by and for Black women on the African continent and across the African diaspora. There is an untapped culture current of imagination in Black women. We are visionaries, dreamers, lovers, fighters, organizers, abolitionists, and we are artists. We are the poets we have been waiting for. Art is not so much about reactive expression as it is intentional presence. It is our unothering. We do not create because we have the answers. We create because we are possessed by our questions. Art for the people, by the people, and from the people is crucial and necessary. Art is how we do ideas. It is how we heal. Meaningful art serves and expands our consciousness. We can be more expansive than the consciousness of women, different and united, across the world, making the unheard heard and the invisible visible. Great art shows us how to listen. It is where we discover our belonging and our purpose. It is the cosmic force of possibility. In the midst of all that has tested our communities, I see a future where Black women across the globe are holistically loved and cared for. I see a culture transformed by gratitude for the labor, brilliance, and spirit of Black women. Even now, I witness how we carry stories on the front lines, in clinics and hospital rooms, at the markets and grocery stores, in living rooms, and even on Zoom calls. all across the world, I am witnessing how we create as we step into our power, commanding leadership in our lives, and demanding love in action. We are owning our vulnerability and manifesting our most intimate visions. We are more than the superficial imaginations of colonialism, whiteness, and patriarchy. We are the poetic philosophers of an unseen world. We are the very language of difference and magic. We are the artists necessary to reflect and transform the times. Aja Monet is a blues poet, storyteller, and organizer from Brooklyn, and she is the author of this article. The next article is titled Cicely Tyson, in a haunting excerpt from her memoir, Just As I Am, the revered icon reflects on the America in which she came of age. The era I grew up in both deepened my racial wound and soothed it with healing balm of the arts. My childhood spanned the 1920s and 1930s, two of the most economically memorable and culturally rich decades in American history, a period when Negro literature, music, and culture flourished. The Roaring Twenties rollicked joyously with jazz, decadence, and illegal whiskey, while the thunderous market crash of 1929 rattled nerves throughout the 30s. What these shifts meant to daily life, or whether they had any noticeable consequence at all, depended upon where you lived and how much you were able to earn, both of which were inextricably tied to the color of your skin. The United States has never been one nation under God, but several nations gazing up at him, dissimilar faces huddled beneath a single flag. In white America, the 20s may have roared, but in my black world, in what has been called the other America, the decade also moaned. The fact that the Great Depression was given a name just meant that enough whites were now suffering alongside us to warrant an official title. New York City earned its wings during the 20s. The five boroughs overflowed with more than 5 million residents, moving the city ahead of London as the world's most populous, by boat and by rail, by foot and by any means necessary. Immigrant families flooded in, carrying with them the same dreams my own parents had clutched when they arrived from the Caribbean island. During Phase 1 of the Great Migration, millions of colored folks, as we were then called, moved from the rural South to New York City and other urban centers around the Northeast and Midwest. The Ku Klux Klan had raised its burning crosses with increasing height and frequency, signaling it was long past time for us to flee. Those who came to New York mostly settled in Harlem, then the largest black community in the country. Uptown West was the place to be. The nation began tapping its toes to bebop during the jazz age. If jazz was America's first musical superstar, then Harlem was that star's grand arena. Anyone eager to cut a step while relishing big band brilliance stopped by the Savoy Ballroom, birthplace of the Lindy Hop and land of the Charleston and Foxtrot, or the back room. The speakeasy's entrance was hidden behind a bookcase. The Cotton Club, then on 142nd Street and Lenox Avenue, was the ultimate hotspot. Night after night in that decade and beyond, greats such as Duke Ellington, Fletcher Henderson, Cab Calloway, Billie Holiday, Louis Armstrong, Fats Waller, Bessie Smith, and Jelly Roll Morton delivered hanky-lifting performances, riveting audiences with their artistic genius. The music's electrifying spirit could not be contained. Even amid a strictly religious upbringing like my own, the city pulsated with revival, and as a child, I could feel the fever. Jazz stirred at the center of a broader cultural movement, the Harlem Renaissance, a profound social, intellectual, and artistic awakening in Black America that spilled over into all facets of society. Renowned philosopher Alan Locke, who penned the movement's definitive text, The New Negro, 1925, called the eras a spiritual emancipation. James Weldon Johnson had his own description for it, a flowering of Negro literature, a historically shackled and voiceless community now demanded its full freedom and its say. It was our first opportunity in this country to define ourselves, to express our unique identity, and declare our humanity. The chorus of gifted literary voices that Locke gathered in The New Negro, which includes essays, poetry, and fiction by writers such as Zora Neale Hurston, Langston Hughes, County Cullen, and Claude McKay, delivered the movement's rallying cry for Black autonomy and self-respect. Locke, who earned his doctorate at Harvard University, was the first Black Rhodes Scholar and served as a philosophy professor at Howard University, encouraged artists to look to Africa for inspiration. The path to Black progress, he understood, began with self-determination and a regard for our homeland heritage. The question is no longer what whites think of the Negro, he wrote in his anthology, but of what the Negro wants to do and what price he is willing to pay for it. Locke and his contemporary, W.E.B. Du Bois, is one of the most distinguished scholars of the 20th century and author of The Souls of Black Folk, 1903, held differing views about Black aesthetic expression and its role in the movement. And yet, the two shared the conviction that the arts were essential to forging a new Black identity. With the Black elite at its helm, the Renaissance shined its light into every corner of the artistic community, from literature and music to the performing and visual arts. Shuffle Along, which was produced, written, and performed entirely by African Americans, debuted on Broadway in 1921, showcasing the talents of Josephine Baker, Paul Robeson, and Adelaide Hall. Aaron Douglas, the eminent painter and graphic artist who produced the illustrations for The New Negro, created hundreds of images that evoked Black pride and captured the Renaissance spirit. The Depression was just one of the series of devastations Black people endured during the 1930s. In 1931, long before the Exonerated Five were deprived of justice, the Scottsboro Boys, 9 Black teenagers, were falsely accused in Alabama of raping 2 white women on a train. In a case of blatant racial bias, an all-white jury convicted the boys and sentenced 8 of them to death. The following year, the U.S. government sanctioned the Tuskegee Syphilis Experiment, a 40-year-long health assault on our community. Biomedical research doctors recruited impoverished Black men with the promise of free medical care. Scores of our men were used as guinea pigs to study the long-term effects of syphilis, unaware that they were being denied treatment long after penicillin had been discovered as a cure. The attack on our humanity continued in 1934. That year, the Federal Housing Administration established redlining, a set of racially discriminatory real estate and bank lending practices that barred Blacks from purchasing homes in white neighborhoods, and thus set the stage for the wealth disparity between Black and white households that remains to this day. Home and land ownership are the primary means by which Americans have historically amassed wealth. And when Blacks were locked out of bank loans and segregated into slums, we were robbed of the potential to build fortunes. President Franklin D. Roosevelt's New Deal brought a measure of relief for poor Blacks, but some of its policies, such as redlining, made the New Deal a raw one for us. It's no wonder that many African Americans carry a lingering distrust of whites, even those we sincerely love and embrace. Given the horrors of our abuse in this nation, we are understandably wary. To ever heal those deep racial traumas, and seldom has it felt more urgent that we do, we must acknowledge that they indeed still exist, throbbing with tender beneath the surface, spilling over like molten rage into the streets. As difficult as it is to recall this country's atrocities, it is essential that every American of every color does so. It is critical that we connect our ugly, centuries-long history with our times now. A cop's knee on George Floyd's neck and bullets riddling Breonna Taylor's body. And even when the impulse arises to cringe and look away from a system predicated on Black oppression, a system that is still doing precisely what it was designed to do, we must stare into the face of our past and examine what happened here on our soil, much of it less than a lifetime ago, a lot of it happening now. Turning a blind eye to our history has not saved us from its consequences. My early years played out during these two widely different decades, the first a cultural resurrection and the next a painful reckoning. In 1939, during the last days of the Depression, Billie Holiday stepped bravely up to a microphone at Cafe Society in New York's Greenwich Village and sang for the first time her lyrical protest anthem, Strange Fruit. Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. A bitter crop battered and dropping, the bruised and blood-stained carcass of the other America. This is from the book Just As I Am, a memoir by Cicely Tyson with Michelle Burford. The title of the next article is Keeping You Healthy Is Their Job. Meet four inspiring wellness advocates who have devoted their careers to making the lives of women of color better. With all that's going on with the pandemic, it is critical for Black women to put our health wellness, and self-care first. By becoming proactive leaders within their respective health-related fields, these incredible women are using their powers for good. Accepting their mission toward better health is a great way for all of us to begin 2021. The Doctor with a Heart. Dr. Blackstock, founder and CEO of Advancing Health Equity, Yahoo News medical contributor. Last spring, during the first peak of the coronavirus outbreak, Dr. Blackstock, a board-certified emergency medicine physician, was working at an urgent care center in Brooklyn, where hundreds of ill patients were coming through the door. That was a little traumatizing, even for a physician, recalls Blackstock, the founder of Advancing Health Equity, a group committed to partnering with healthcare organizations to address health inequities in medical care. I was worrying about becoming infected and taking the virus home to my family. In addition to being worried about my patients, it was a lot to handle at that time. The Harvard Medical School graduate credits her mother, the late Dr. Dale Blackstock, a nephrologist who died at the age of 47 from leukemia, for her own tenacity and drive. She was a role model for my twin sister, Oni, who is also a physician, and me, says Blackstock. She had tremendous influence on both of us. Blackstock has not only been in the trenches during the pandemic, but she has been a consistent advocate for Black patients and knows exactly why our communities have been disproportionately rocked by COVID-19, systemic racism. Testing is not available in our communities, she points out. Black people are also more likely to be essential workers or in public-facing service positions that put us at risk for being affected. Even before the pandemic, we were more likely to bear the burden of chronic disease, not because it's biological, but because the health of our community has been shaped by a lack of access to health care and by the inadequate care we too often receive. The busy mother of two young children is determined to help Black people get on an equal footing when it comes to our health care. The road will not be smooth, but she intends to keep pushing. I am working with the healthcare organizations to address systemic racism because we know that at multiple levels, it affects the health of Black communities, says Blackstock, who has been active on social media and has appeared on various cable news shows as a medical contributor. I will continue to amplify that message by working directly with organizations around their health culture and around the care they provide for our communities to ensure that we are able to receive the best care possible. This work is most important to me. The trainer leading a movement, Lita Lewis, health and wellness influencer, owner of Thick Athletics Apparel. With more than 520,000 followers on her Instagram, Lita Lewis knows a thing or two about making health and wellness a public priority. In 2013, the Australian native was going through a bad breakup and battling depression when she walked into a gym. From there, she began transforming her body, mind, and spirit. She left her job in corporate America as part of a resolve to strategically knock out everything that was dimming her light. I wanted to live with more passion and pursue a life built on more purpose, which definitely included fitness, she says. It was the first step toward achieving a healthier and happier life. She began posting her fitness journey on Instagram and conducting exercise boot camps in a park in her Fort Greene neighborhood. Her fitness sessions quickly grew from one or two friends to over 25 participants, even as the affirmations, wisdom, and routine she shared on social media helped her garner a large and loyal following. "I am really about empowering women to lead healthier lifestyles," Lewis says. "Fitness is just one component of that. I like to think of myself as someone who is promoting overall wellness to my audience." Requests for her to provide personal training, speak on panels, and give keynote speeches poured in. Lewis eventually moved to Los Angeles, landed gigs training Kevin Durant and LaToya Luckett, and started a clothing line called Thick Athletics Apparel, geared toward curvy women. Lewis is absolutely loving the difference she is making in the lives of Black women with her fitness message and inclusive clothing line. She's happy advocating for women who need support in making wellness a priority in their lives. "To be in this space and to be recognized as a woman of color who has pioneered this idea of body positivity in all shapes and forms while giving voice on social media to Black and brown women who have curvier shapes, it means the world to me," she says. "I take the role and responsibility very seriously because I know it has the ability to literally change how people see themselves. The first step is believing that we can improve ourselves and lead healthier lifestyles." The next article is titled Essence Essential Heroes. The Essence Essential Heroes Awards, sponsored by AT&T, Disney, Pixar, Hyundai, and Walt Disney World, honored extraordinary service in 2020, highlighting more than 20 trailblazers across four categories: education, community change makers, mental health, and parents, who rose to the occasion during the pandemic to ensure the well-being of others. Host Eva Marcel welcomes the audience to a virtual celebration of our essential heroes. Hyundai joined us in recognizing community change makers. Then John Batiste performed Born to Play from the upcoming Disney Pixar film Soul. Have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.